First case.
The court will now call Pack Associates, Inc. v. Jacob & Martin, LLC. May it please the court, Ms. Stephanie Serrano will argue for the appellant, and Ms. Catherine Elridge will argue for the appellee.
Thank you very much. You may begin. And while she's coming to the podium, I forgot a couple of things. Forgot to introduce all of us. So to my left is Justice Brian Walker. To my right is Justice Mike Wallach. And I'm Elizabeth Kerr. And the only reason I'm sitting in the middle talking like this is because we sit in seniority order. And I've been on the court the longest, so I get to talk. With that, you may go ahead.
Good afternoon, and may it please the court. My name is Stephanie Serrano, and I represent Appellant Half Associates, Inc. We're here today regarding the trial court's dismissal of Half Associates' claims that were filed against Appellee Jacob & Martin in the trial court. The claims were dismissed pursuant to Chapter 150 of the Texas Civil Practice and Remedies Code, and in particular, the Certificate of Merit requirements therein. The Certificate of Merit requirements in Chapter 150 require that for any claimant asserting claims against a design professional, you must obtain a Certificate of Merit or an affidavit signed by a third-party design professional to support the claim. So this is for architects, engineers, surveyors. In this case, both Half Associates and Jacob & Martin are engineers to whom the Certificate of Merit statute applies. The Certificate of Merit is something that has to be filed according to the statute with the first filed pleading against the design professional. Texas courts have said that its purpose is to deter meritless claims. It is merely to make sure that the claimants make a threshold showing that their claims have merit and are not frivolous before proceeding past the very initial proceedings in the case. This is an early requirement, not a substitute for a full-blown report after discovery has been obtained for the party. It is a first-filed pleading requirement.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. So I take it that this is not as arduous a process necessarily as like a medical expert report in a malpractice case. I mean, what exactly are the level of facts that your certificate of merit of fine has to show?
So the requirements are specifically found, the substantive requirements are specifically found in subpart B of section 150.002. The affidavit shall set forth specifically for each theory of recovery for which damages are sought, the negligence, if any, or other action, error, or omission of the licensed or registered professional in providing the service.
There's a key word there, specifically, correct?
And Texas courts have considered that term specifically to determine what does it mean. And they've specifically negated that it does not mean the Certificate of Merit affiant, who is an engineer, does not need to go through all of the elements of the claim. The Texas courts have found that the Certificate of Merit affiant need not add additional facts in addition to the exact language of what is in the statute, the act, error, or omission that supports the claim that is being alleged. And in this case, so with regard to the statute, it was amended in 2019. Prior to 2019, only the original plaintiff in a case would have to file a Certificate of Merit to support claims against a design professional. In 2019, the statute was amended to specifically state that the requirement also applies to third-party plaintiffs asserting claims for contribution and indemnity. So that change was just made in 2019, and that's exactly what we're here about today.
So in this case, because your client was sued, and your client wants to bring in part the claim against Jacob & Martin to help pay for that, supposedly, then that's why you're here having to prepare this report in this case?
Yes, Your Honor. So specifically, the plaintiff in the underlying case is the City of Willow Park. The City of Willow Park filed a negligence claim against Half Associates and said, Half Associates, you were negligent. You prepared a cost estimate. You submitted it to the Texas Water Development Board to get us funding for our project, and that funding was insufficient, and we're asserting a negligence claim against you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Exactly how much short was the estimate from the actual needed cost?
I believe it was $6 to $6.5 million, and it was a multi-million-dollar project.
So it was a big variance.
Yes, Your Honor.
So I know that we're not here on the merits yet, but I'm just curious about this process because Your third-party petition bringing in Jacob and Martin said that upon information and belief, it was Jacob and Martin that submitted the funding application that's being complained of by the City of Willow Park, and your Mr. Norris's certificate of merit has a reference to a September 17th, 2018 estimate of probable construction cost. I guess I'm surprised that there's not more information about, like, who, surely there was somebody's name on that estimate.
So the, and this actually kind of speaks to the certificate of merit. At the time HAP Associates filed their third-party petition, discovery was just getting underway in the case, and HAP Associates certainly had not gotten discovery from Jacob and Martin, who had not been joined as a party to the case yet. As HAP has pled, HAP did not submit the application, and HAP actually didn't have a copy in its files of the actual application with the cost estimate that was submitted to the Texas Water Development Board. HAP had the communications between the parties, including Jacob and Martin at the time, saying that Jacob and Martin was tasked with that and ultimately did file it. And after we filed our third-party petition, we received a copy where Jacob and Martin had their name on it, had their seal on it, and submitted it to the Water Development Board.
But that was not available at the time your certificate of merit was prepared, so interesting.
HAP Associates did not have a copy of that because HAP Associates, Jacob and Martin submitted it on behalf of the city, and HAP Associates did not have a copy in its files.
Okay. Well, maybe this is not a fair question, but why didn't the City of Willow Park also sue Jacob and Martin?
I don't represent the City of Willow Park, so I could only speculate for you.
That's okay. You don't have to do that.
If I understand your argument correctly, is the city had their report from Mr. Flores, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
So the city, because they were suing an engineer, had to have a report from an engineer.
A certificate of merit affidavit.
Yeah.
Yes, Your Honor.
I'm trying to simplify it here, but the certificate of merit, and that was attached to their petition.
That's correct.
Okay. And so what you're saying is, given what's in their petition, which you attached to your third-party claim, in addition to your certificate of merit from Mr. Norris, if you put those two together, that's good enough to qualify as one, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so what you're saying is, in other words, the city's certificate of merit says quite a bit about the shortcoming in the cost estimate which was made, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And then your report from your certificate of merit from Mr. Norris says some of that is the responsibility of Jacob and Martin.
Some of what's in his affidavit and some of the facts that plaintiff is pleading with respect to his affidavit.
I was doing that as a preface because my question is, it looks like there's basically on page 2 of Mr. Norris's certificate of merit, that's really the substance of what he's saying, which is that Jacob and Martin prepared estimated construction costs, and those estimated construction costs were passed on to the funding agency on behalf of the city. But there's no explanation of which ones or how much. He doesn't tie anything in particular back to Mr. Flores's report, does he?
So I would say the last paragraph on page 2, he specifically concludes that the City of Willow Park's criticisms in the petition relate to the estimated construction costs that were submitted to the Water Development Board by Jacob Martin and the resultant funding obtained from the Water Development Board that was allegedly insufficient.
To which we get to my bottom line question, which is, if we were looking at other areas of law, that might be referred to as an ipsy-dixit or is a conclusory statement because there's no explanation to support that, correct?
I would say that the paragraph before it is what supports it, and then he reaches his conclusion. So he says, Jacob and Martin, you submitted these costs to the Water Development Board, and you prepared the engineering estimate and sealed it with the cost that was required by the Water Development Board to obtain the funding, and ultimately I've reviewed the petition, and because you submitted those costs with the resultant funding, it's the complaint of the plaintiff in the case.
But
you caused or contributed there too.
But he didn't tie that. He didn't tie which cost. They submitted a whole lot of costs But how do we know which ones and how that relates to Mr. Flores's certificate of merit?
So he concludes here the estimated construction costs that were submitted to the Water Development Board by Jacob Martin, which resulted in the funding, the insufficient funding that is complained of by the plaintiff in the original petition. And I would also say it's a combination of the plaintiff's claim with his certificate of merit. So the plaintiff's claim is you estimated, we think you were negligent by your estimation and your submission, and we're saying contribution, there's another party who caused or contributed to the claim you're making against me. Part of your claim is submission, and we're saying right here that Jacob and Martin was tasked with the submission with the resultant funding of the allegedly insufficient funding that you're alleging, tying it directly to the plaintiff's claim in the case.
So in a certificate of merit situation, your position is that this sort of bare bones statement without any supporting proof or any more granular detail is enough to meet the threshold under the statute?
I would say the direct language is that the certificate of merit affiant, who is an engineer, is required to assert acts, errors, or omissions that, in effect, are operative facts. Well,
but would it have been enough if Mr. Norris had just said Jacob and Martin's acts contributed to any damage? I mean,
I think you have to be specific. But
yeah, I guess I'm struggling with.
I agree. If he were to say Jacob Martin did some geotechnical testing out at the site, and they were an engineer on the project, that would not be a connection to the claims that we are claiming. But Half Associates has a third-party petition saying Jacob Martin submitted the cost. Jacob and Martin sealed the engineering report with the cost in conjunction with the Water Development Board project. And then you've got, and that is the subject of the claim that's being asserted against Half. And then you've got Mr. Norris saying, I've looked at this. Jacob and Martin was tasked with submitting the cost to the Water Development Board to get the funding. Jacob and Martin sealed the report. These are acts that are directly related to the claim that's being asserted by the plaintiff against Half Associates in the direct negligence claim.
You alluded to earlier that this, you know, there are cases that deal with specificity, or at least what's necessary to constitute specific under the statute. With the cases that you've reviewed, you don't think there's any problem with specificity here. You think that there's nothing in the case law that indicates to you that this is not enough.
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, I would say if this is not specific enough, I would say as a practitioner who represents design professionals often, I'm left scratching my head with, well, what is needed? If this is not enough, what type of specificity does need to be provided in this threshold showing just to show that the claims do not have, that are not frivolous and that they have merit? What more are you to provide, especially before you've had a chance to conduct discovery with regard to that defendant?
Yeah, because what is the deadline for, I mean, I seem to remember something in the briefing that Half was bumping up against a six-month deadline to bring in?
There was a joinder deadline in the scheduling order for us to bring in other parties to the case.
So, I mean, this is really not a case of first impression, but it could be an issue of first impression in that you're essentially saying that there may be some parameters lacking in the case law as far as specificity and the need for more direction from the courts, do you think, or not?
To me, with the courts that have already opined on it, they basically have said the specificity that's required is what is said in that subpart B. You need to specify act. You need to include acts, errors, or omissions that, if you look at them, they can serve as operative facts with regard to the claims that are being pled. And here we're claiming contribution and indemnity. So if you look at the claims that are being pled, do these acts, errors, or omissions serve as operative facts for the claim Half is alleging here? So with regard to Mr. Norris's certificate of merit, I would point out that he is a licensed professional engineer in the state of Texas with over 40 years of experience, and he points out, he concludes after specifying specific acts that he's identified that Jacob and Martin has performed, he states that the claim asserted, he's reviewed the claim asserted by the plaintiff against Half Associates, and he states that the claim asserted by plaintiff in the lawsuit against Half Associates implicates acts or omissions of, and at least are in part the responsibility of Jacob and Martin. And the acts of Jacob and Martin that he's laid out that constitute operative facts in this situation for a contribution or indemnity claim when the plaintiff is complaining that Half submitted these costs to get insufficient funding are: Jacob and Martin was involved in the preparation and submission of the estimated construction costs for the project to the Water Development Board.
Quick question, we're about to run out of time. So this is dismissal without prejudice. What's to keep you from someday, if necessary, come back in and doing it all over again?
So there is a bit of mixed case law on that. I would say that a party should be entitled to assert a contribution claim, but there is case law out there saying that you've got the trial court, the original proceeding shot for your contribution claim, or else you lose it. Again, I would argue that's not the applicable case law. However, that is out there that potentially you couldn't bring it again. Also, there's case law out there where courts have opined on the benefit of judicial economy. And the result of the trial court's decision here has been that meritorious claims were dismissed early, and a key party to the proceeding has been totally left out, which is absolutely a detriment to my client, Half Associates.
Thank you very much. Yes, thank you.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Catherine Elbridge. I represent the appellee in this case, Jacob and Martin LLC. Now, the question before this court today is, did the trial court abuse its discretion in dismissing the claims against Jacob and Martin without prejudice based on an insufficient certificate of merit? We contend the answer to that question is no. The trial court did not abuse its discretion. And I'm going to talk about why that's the case now. Opposing counsel had mentioned, certificate of merits are required here under Chapter 150. 150.002 provides that a plaintiff who sues a certain professional, including engineers like Jacob and Martin, their certificate of merit is required with that petition. And if a sufficient one is not filed, then it's a mandatory dismissal. The only discretion the trial court has is that dismissal going to be with or without prejudice. Here, there's no dispute that Half was required to file the certificate of merit, and we all agree that one was filed. However, it was insufficient. Half did not file a sufficient certificate of merit, and here's what they did file. First, they relied on the certificate of merit filed by City of Willow Park, Mr. Flores, a certificate of merit that was only addressing the claims as to Half. Jacob and Martin is not even mentioned anywhere in that certificate of merit. Then they also rely on the certificate of merit of Mr. Joseph Norris, and that purports to be focused on Jacob and Martin. But unlike the certificate of merit of Mr. Flores, Mr. Norris's certificate of merit is vague and woefully deficient to tell this court whether or not the claims that Half has against Jacob and Martin have any merit.
We all have a question. So I'll start with them in the seat.
Yes, Your Honor.
So let's assume that when Mr. Flores prepared his certificate of merit, he makes the allegations against Half, and maybe he didn't know about Jacob and Martin. I mean, why is it not okay for Half to come in and say, okay, you've alleged all these things that went wrong on the estimation cost, but we weren't the ones who did it?
Your Honor, the problem with that, first of all, if we look at the DHM design case that came out of the Dallas Court of Appeals that's cited on page 25 and page 31 of our appellee's brief, it tells us that it's not sufficient to rely on a certificate of merit that has been written as to someone else. So we know that we can't necessarily rely on that. But no, that was not in a contribution indemnity, Your Honor. I don't believe I've seen a case in a contribution and indemnity specifically as this, but it was two defendants, one that was sued first and then a second defendant that was sued later. And they tried to rely on the first certificate of merit as to the second defendant, and the court held that that was not sufficient. But I think the analysis and the reasoning behind that could still be applied in this situation. And the reason, the problem that we have here, Justice Wallach, you made a point here that Mr. Norris doesn't tie the claims and his opinions to those stated in Mr. Flores's opinion. In fact, when you look at Mr. Norris's opinion, you don't see any reference to Mr. Flores's opinion at all. So we can't even tell from his opinion whether or not he even reviewed Mr. Flores's opinion. And he certainly doesn't go back and say, I reviewed Mr. Flores's opinion and everything that Mr. Flores says about half would apply to Jacob and Martin. It just doesn't say that at all.
Well, let's set aside Mr. Flores's certificate of merit for the moment. We're not talking about a negligence case involving the design of a nuclear power plant or something of that nature. It's you missed a $20 million cost estimate by $6 million. Okay? Mr. Norris says they prepared cost. They submitted it to the funding agency and oops, they missed it by a pretty substantial sum. Act, omission, connection. Why isn't that sufficient under this low standard of trying to say, well, this report is just to make sure it's not frivolous? Why doesn't it meet that?
In indemnity situation, not a negligence theory.
Correct. Well, first let me just explain that the statute doesn't distinguish between claims of contribution and indemnity that you have a separate standard or some other level that you need to meet versus a direct negligence claim. So as of now, the statute tells us what needs to be in that certificate of merit. And the Texas Supreme Court has told us that even despite all the revisions of the statute, the core purpose still remains. That certificate of merit must certify that the defendant professional actions or omissions were negligent or otherwise erroneous and the factual basis for such claim. And the reason for that is so that the court can determine, do these claims have merit or not? If you just list down actions.
Go back to my question. Act, mm-hmm. preparing the estimates, mm-hmm. submission to the funding agency who relied upon those estimates, missed it by $6.5 million, and they're implicated to at least some degree. Act, omission, connection. Why isn't that sufficient?
Your Honor, that's not sufficient because that's really not what Mr. Norris's report says. Mr. Norris refers vaguely to some sort of involvement and task in submitting and estimating the cost. We don't even know really what they did or what they did wrong for that matter. Well, Your Honor, I believe that statement just restates what the allegation is. It doesn't state what they did wrong or what errors they made or what negligence happened. And certainly you don't have to marshal all your evidence or...
Well, yeah, and I would think that in a situation like this where Hap's first offense is we didn't do anything wrong, you know, it'd be kind of tricky to submit a certificate that says, you know, yes, Hap really messed this up, but we're going to drag in Jacob and Martin because they were the ones who...
Right. I understand that it's a tricky situation to be in that context, but what Half needed to have done or Mr. Norris needed to have done in this is to identify what specifically Jacob and Martin did that was an error or wrong or negligence and the factual basis for that. And we have not heard that. We've heard allegations, we've heard criticisms that are in Willow Park's petition. Those are again all allegations, but that doesn't tell us what gives those allegations merit. We need to have something tangible to give merit, to meet the Chapter 150's core purpose.
What would be examples of that? I mean, I get what you're saying. You're saying categorically, generally, that it's lacking in that regard. But what would be there that would make it satisfactory?
Well, something more than what's currently what's there.
Give me an example.
I think they would need that Mr. Norris would have needed to have explained how Jacob and Martin not just was involved in preparation of submission of estimated costs, but what they did and what part of it was wrong. We can't tell what part of this Half did and what part of this Jacob and Martin did.
At this stage of proceedings, is that necessary just to show that it's not a frivolous claim?
I believe it is, Your Honor. I believe it is necessary to meet that threshold matter because what you have to show is you have to have a certification here, not allegations, but a certification that the defendant professional's actions or omissions were negligent or otherwise erroneous. That's from the Meldon and Hunt versus East Rio Hondo Water Supply case. It's cited on page 18 of our appellee's brief. It's a Texas Supreme Court case from 2017. Now, in that case, they were looking at whether or not a plaintiff was required to present some sort of facts as to each element of each claim, and certainly they're not required to do that. And the Supreme Court said you're not required to do that, but you've got to do something more than just make some conclusory allegations. You've got to meet this core purpose. Those core purpose of a factual basis requirement still exists, and the Texas Supreme Court has told us that. We also see that in other cases beyond the Texas Supreme Court that hold that same thing. And that makes sense because if we're just regurgitating allegations and just saying, well, just everything that plaintiffs said that Half did, no, that was really Jacob and Martin, that's just an allegation. We need some sort of factual basis for that.
If the report had said that they were off by $6.5 million, would that have been sufficient?
I think that would have gotten us closer there. It doesn't even indicate, you know, what kind of amount we were off by, what sort of role we performed, just that we were involved, we had a role, and that Willow Park's criticism implicate Half's actions. It says implicate Half and Associates, either their acts or omissions, or at least in part. It just says in part, and that's just a very conclusory ipsa dixit, just like we you mentioned earlier, that it's just it doesn't really give us any substance. It doesn't give us any information to actually certify, do these claims have merit or not? And that's what's the problem with Mr. Norris's certificate of merit as compared to Mr. Flores. Now, I understand that they were running up against a joinder deadline, but that was a joinder deadline and a scheduling order that certainly parties could have extended that if there needed to be more time or effort. I understand that they received, that plaintiffs had, or Half had received some documents and discovery right before the joinder deadline. Certainly, again, they could have extended that out, but those documents, I mean, we can't look at that and can't rely on things that are outside of the record. So I think that the fact that they were running up against a joinder deadline is a bit of a red herring.
So if we affirm this, can they just go back and do it over again?
Your Honor,
since it was without prejudice.
It was without prejudice, so they can file a new action and attach a new certificate of merit that has more detail because it is without prejudice. So
I would assume that you would file a motion right away saying, oh, they missed the deadline.
Well, I would think that it would be in a different lawsuit because it wouldn't have been in the first file. There's also a law that talks about the certificate of merit. It has to be in the first filed complaint, so they can't.
Didn't our court have an opinion on that?
I'm sorry?
Didn't our court publish an opinion on that along with the Dallas Court of Appeals?
That it has to be in the first filed.
First filed doesn't necessarily mean first filed in the first time.
Your Honor, I'd have to look back at that. I don't think that was part of our case because that was not an issue in our case. So I'd have to look at those opinions. I just know generally that it does need to be in the first filed petition. So, but in any event, that didn't happen here. So we don't necessarily have to address that in this case before us. I also want to talk a little bit about, make sure that we have a good understanding of the difference between derivative and vicarious liability claims. I think there's some confusion in the appellant's briefing as to that. They mentioned that these claims are really just derivative claims of the claims that Willow Park asserts against Half. But derivative claims are not the same thing as vicarious liability claims. And I know they cite two cases talking about discussing that vicarious liability concept. And so when you have a situation where there is vicarious liability, so you have, for instance, an employer-employee situation where the employer is going to be automatically liable for the conduct of the employee that was committed in the course and scope of his employment. You're looking at the relationship there. You're not looking at separate acts or conduct on the part of the person being held responsible vicariously. That's different. And certainly in that situation, you could perhaps rely on a certificate of merit that goes just towards half if we were vicariously liable in an alter ego concept or some other concept like that. But here, this is contribution indemnity. We have to actually look at the specific conduct of Jacob and Martin, not just the relationship between Jacob and Martin and half and their self-consulting agreement relationship. So with a contribution claim, you're looking at direct conduct, direct acts that contributed to plaintiff's harm. And you can...
You referenced that subcontracting agreement. Are we not hampered a little bit by not having any of these documents that are referred to in those certificates of merit? I mean, I feel like I'm sort of being asked to decide things in a
Yes, Your Honor. I can definitely see that the subcontractor agreement is not listed in there. And I do think that you can see in the Mr. Norris's report that he says that he did review that. And you can even see the date of that. And it does provide some confusion. And Mr. Norris doesn't provide any explanation of this. But you see the date of the subconsultant agreement, which presumably is when the relationship began, September 2019. This date was well after the allegations that are pled in Willow Park's petition of the application and the approval of the loan, which happened in 2018.
Well, but we don't even have the documents that was before us that
we
reviewed and relied on.
Yes, Your Honor, we don't. So we are somewhat hampered by just, you know, what the opinion says. So we have to look, well, is this enough? And we contend that this is not enough. You know, that certainly when you look at these dates, they're off. Now, maybe there's some explanation to that. Maybe there was some sort of work that was being done prior to the formal engagement agreement being signed. But Mr. Norris doesn't tell us that. We don't know. We don't know what the situation was. We just can see from the dates that he's listed of these documents that a relationship began in 2019. The engineering feasibility report that they rely on was signed January 28, 2020. So this was all after the allegations of conduct.
Well, Mr. Norris did reflect on, I'm not arguing with him, I'm just looking here at Mr. Norris's certificate of merit.
Mm-hmm.
He does refer to, and here again, it seems vague, and I don't know what he's talking about, but mm-hmm. He refers in number three to this February 2018 email chain involving CAP and associates and Jacob and Martin and others regarding the PIF.
Yes, sir. I have no idea what that is. He doesn't explain that. And I think if he's reviewed these documents, he certainly has some information before him that he can explain some of this, or at least explain these dates. Why are these dates off compared to the petition dates? It really doesn't make any sense. And that's what the whole point of the Certificate of Merit is, to make some sense out of these claims and tell us, do these claims have merit or is this frivolous? And providing just such vague and broad statements of actions or things that were potentially involvement or tasks that may have been done doesn't tell us if there were any errors with those actions or if we did anything wrong. And that is the problem with this. And again, it's not a vicarious liability situation. So I don't think we can rely on those cases pertaining to vicarious liability. Certainly, it may be a derivative claim, but it's based on actions that allegedly Jacob and Martin would have made that half is asserting. So we have to have a certificate of merit on what those actions were and what errors had occurred. This certificate of merit does not shed any light on and make a threshold showing that is required pursuant to Chapter 150. And we would request that this court affirm the trial court's order granting the motion to dismiss without prejudice. Thank you.
The clock hasn't started yet. Stand by.
Great, thank you. Yes, thank you. All right. Thank you. You may proceed.
A few things in rebuttal. With regard to HAF's ability to refile its claims, I think the case law is clear that we cannot do so, or amend our certificate of merit and do so in this case. And because these are derivative claims for contribution and indemnity, HAF can't go refile them right away in a separate lawsuit either. HAF would have to wait until it go through the trial in this case and have an actual judgment against it before it could then assert contribution or indemnity in a separate lawsuit. With regard, I wanted to point out one case citation to the CBM Engineers case, which states the statute does not require a plaintiff to marshal his evidence or provide the full range of information that the defendant is entitled to obtain through formal discovery. So again, the certificate of merit is meant to be a threshold affidavit, and the courts have said you provide acts, errors, or omissions. It's an engineer writing this. State what the acts, errors, or omissions are, and the court takes that and do those acts, errors, or omissions constitute operative facts under the claims that are being alleged. And with regard to what is put in Mr. Norris's certificate of merit about the acts of Jacob and Martin, two things. The plaintiff claims that HAF submitted the cost. You submitted the cost to the Water Development Board that resulted in the allegedly insufficient funding, and you sealed the engineering feasibility report, which Mr. Norris states includes estimated construction costs associated with funding sought and obtained from the Water Development Board. And HAF pled that that report, that engineering report, was a requirement of the Water Development Board to issue the funding. And HAF pointed out to the trial court that Chapter 22 of the Texas Administrative Code, Section 137.33, states that the purpose of the engineer's seal is to assure the user of the engineering product that the work has been performed or directly supervised by the sealing professional engineer. Upon sealing, engineers take full responsibility for that work. So Jacob and Martin has submitted the cost.
What does take full responsibility mean? We hear that phrase a lot in society. What does it mean here?
I would say full responsibility would be for the contents of the document that is sealed, which included in this case the costs that were submitted to the Water Development Board to obtain the funding. That is the complaint by the plaintiff against HAF. And with regard to the Jacob and Martin has repeated throughout the trial court and the briefing and now today that HAF certificate of merit client had to point out some erroneous or something erroneous that Jacob and Martin did or some negligence by Jacob and Martin, but that interpretation is just in direct conflict with the plain language of subpart B of the statute that specifically contemplates there might not be any negligence. The negligence, if any, or other action, error, or omission of the licensed or registered design professional here, he's pointed out these acts of Jacob and Martin. You submitted the costs, you sealed the engineering report with the costs that was required for the funding. That's certainly enough to demonstrate that HAF is not asserting frivolous claims, but you're asserting claims against a party who played a role in the very items that are at issue in the case. And if this court were to affirm the trial court's order, you're looking at a situation where multi-party construction cases often have multiple design professionals. And so if a design professional gets sued for something that includes the acts errors or the acts that were performed by another on the case, you're left with, okay, do I decide to admit fault or have a contribution claim? Because apparently I can't have both. And I don't think that that is consistent with the language and the or purpose behind the Certificate of Merit statute. And so with regard to a contribution or indemnity claim, the language of the statute only requires that the third-party plaintiff assert the actions that constitute operative facts under the contribution and indemnity derivative claims that that third-party plaintiff is asserting against the design professional. And for Mr. Norris's Certificate of Merit, it makes a threshold showing that Half's derivative claims against Jacob and Martin aren't just frivolous. Jacob and Martin played a key role. And in this case, the trial court abused its discretion by misapplying the Certificate of Merit statute in this third-party contribution and indemnity case. That's in conflict with the direct language of the Certificate of Merit requirements and the Texas case law applying the same. And for that reason, we would ask this court to reverse the trial court's ruling. Thank you.
Thank you very much.